Grant Holt, striker and Norwich City legend. Played for Norwich, Forest, Rochdale, Hibs, and basically every team who ever existed, including one in Singapore. Winner of League One, the Scottish Championship, and Norwich Player of the Year three times running. Also, genuinely enjoyed a career in wrestling, and of course, an author. But let's see what the book club thought in today's The Football Book Club.
I thought it was cracking, really. It was the book that Kevin Phillips wishes it was.
I was going to read some in the bath and thought, I need to give this book back, I can't do that.
I reckon it was me that led him to become a pro footballer.
What chocolate bar is Grant Holt describing?
Whee! Yes!
Woo! Hi!
Yeah!
Hello!
Hello and welcome to the Football Book Club. The only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read yet another obscure footballer's autobiography. Less Mark Twain, more Paul McShane. I'm James Bug, and over the weeks, we're going to be reading classics such as Diego Costa's The Art of War and Frank Worthington's One Hump or Two. Disgusting. But today we're reading Norwich hero Grant Holt's A Real Football Life, and reading it with me are Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
And James Balgen.
Hello.
So, there's a bit of a caveat to this book. It is one of the most difficult books to get your hand on in the world. Like, it's almost impossible. I'll get to that later. But it's technically not available on Amazon. However, that hasn't stopped people reviewing it for some reason. Basil Boy sadly hasn't reviewed this one. I think he's yet to buy it. But basically, you can only really buy the book on the Norwich website.
This is a con, isn't it?
I quite like that, though. It's quite exclusive. We're part of a very exclusive club now.
That's true. We are the only four people ever to have read the book. So.
Thank you, Grant Holt, for writing an exclusive for the Football Book.
Yeah, that's very kind of you.
We're quite a heavy Norwich podcast anyway. We talk about Norwich a lot.
Yeah, I would say we're 90% Norwich now. Obviously, we did Hucks before. Now we're moving on to our boy, Grant.
And every week, Ken Zong will sing a song about Norwich.
Yeah, he's changed to Wigan. He's Wigan now.
I feel like we probably talk about Norwich more than anyone else who isn't in any way affiliated with Norwich.
I have got quite into Delia Smith during lockdown. Maybe that's why.
I've been eating nothing but Coleman's mustard.
I've been in lockdown with Alexander Tetti.
That's a Channel 5 documentary.
And it ruined my life. In terms of actually getting the book, we had to rely on a friend of mine called George and his friend Holly, the only two people in London, I think, who own Grant Holt's autobiography. And somehow I tracked them down. And this is the first one I haven't got the book with me because we've had to send it to each other.
Yeah.
I was quite upset that when it arrived, no one had written me a little note in the front.
I sent it to Tash and I was going to, and then I thought it'd be weird. So I spent about like genuinely 5 minutes being like, should I write something in this? Like,
Loads of things to James. He wrote loads of messages to James.
Rude.
There was two A4 pages that he'd written to me inside.
Oh, damn it. Right.
And it just said book, 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 over and over.
Two pages. So do you want to hear these reviews? I forgot what we were talking about. I have got a 5-star review from Lisa S called Kept the Other Half Quiet.
Oh my God, Lisa Scott Lee read this book, right?
Lisa Scott Lee.
Or Lisa Simpson.
One of the two. I don't think Lisa Simpson's got another half, so I don't think that quite makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair.
Was Lisa Scott Lee married to Andy Scott Lee, possibly? Was that her brother? Oh, who knows? You're listening to the Andy Scott Lee book club.
The family tree of the Scott Lees.
Well, basically, Lisa S. loved it. She said her hubby loved it. That is the 5-star review.
Yeah.
You can't. We've had this before where someone has reviewed a book on behalf of someone else.
Yeah, I agree. It's a real cop-out.
That's always a cop-out. Because you're what? Are you just watching them read it every 5 seconds and seeing what their reactions are?
True. But then I also looked into her reviewing history. And she'd reviewed some flexible joint tablets on behalf of a dog. So I guess the dog can't type it up. So. Okay, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll be doing a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end. And of course, Ken Zong is back with another chant about an ex-Wigan player. But first, let's go around the group. In a sentence or two, what do you think of the book? James, let's start with you.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's good.
Tash, you felt the same?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. I found the ending a slog, but the beginning was a real roller coaster. I loved it.
Oh, see, I preferred the second half.
Ooh.
I thought it picked up as it went on. I was like, all right, now we're getting to the real stuff. I didn't really like the beginning too much.
Okay. You hate children, though, don't you? Let them grow up.
I mean, that's so, a big part of it.
Yeah. Grant-Holt's not a child in my mind. He's an adult.
Yeah.
Jack, thoughts on children, first of all. Secondly, thoughts on the book?
Pro.
Nice.
Hey.
You enjoyed the book, Jack?
I enjoyed the book. I thought it was a really fun read. I thought it was cracking, really. I feel like it was the book that Kevin Phillips wishes it was.
Yes.
In the sense that...
He should have got Grant Holt to ghostwrite his book.
He really
like Louis Saha was meant to do it for Patrice Evra. Was that right?
Something like that. I mean, it's been years since those episodes. Yeah. I can't remember.
I did quite feel like... I felt like he actually wrote this book. You know?
Mm.
Yeah.
It felt quite honest. So I think that's why I kind of liked it a little bit more.
I agree. It had a lot of character. And also, I don't know. I know who Grant Holt is. I wouldn't say I've got any great sense of, you know, what he's like behind the scenes. But I thought he'd be a bit of a wind-up merchant all the way through. But he was actually like, he was different to how I thought it came across. He was very, you know, he was funny all the way through. And yeah. Like,
and self-deprecating.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, and also like surprisingly progressive a lot of the way through. He had a lot of little asides where he's going like toxic masculinity.
Yeah,
idiots.
That sucks. I hate toxic masculinity. He does. He genuinely does.
Yeah, he genuinely does. Yeah.
There's a bit where he was like, "I'm holding my baby for the first time, and I didn't cry. Not because I'm toxic masculinity or anything like that. Not that rubbish. Yeah. it's because when you have a baby, how could you be sad? I quite like that. Good attitude.
Yeah, he's cute.
Yeah, he's a sweet guy. How did everyone read this book? Because I read it, I think I read it in the way that Grant intended it. I read it on the Eurostar. I read half of it. Then I watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And then I read the rest.
Yes. See, I read the entire thing in the bath. And he has a chapter.
The whole thing?
Yeah. And he has a chapter called Bubble Baths Have a Little Respect and Disconnect. And I was like, me and this guy are on the same level.
Do you think he wrote it in the bath?
Maybe. The pages were a bit wrinkled. Not in one bath, can I just...
Yeah, you must have been incredibly wrinkled because that black book is 300 pages.
No. Also, I will say, this is a loaned book, Tash. That is playing with fire.
Holly or George, if you're listening, you might want to tune out.
You know, actually, at one point, I was going to read some in the bath and thought, I need to give this book back. I can't do that. So I didn't.
Oh, now that's kind of bad. You. Yeah.
See, James is a good guy.
I read it in a jacuzzi, but...
Let's get into it. Front cover.
I like the front cover.
Do you?
I really like the front cover. It reminds me of a Hard-Fight album.
Okay, yeah. I see what I know
it's
you
a bit mean. Like noughties indie lad vibe with the yellow typeface. And yeah, I quite liked it. It was like someone listened to loads of whatever people say I am, that's what I'm not, and then made a really crap album a few months later. This would be the cover for it. I loved it.
Okay, so basically, for those who haven't seen it, it's him in a changing room, I'm guessing celebrating Norwich's promotion, doused in champagne.
But it's like they've chosen the worst possible face for him. Like they must have gone through like so many to be like, oh, he's not gurning quite enough there. It's like he's going...
He should have had live photos on. You could have chosen the right frame for that picture.
Switch to another photo, please.
I feel like it's a photo that should be in a picture section, which surprisingly, there isn't one, which was disappointing.
I wonder if there is one in the hardback, but I'm not paying 20 quid times four to the Norwich.
To the Carrow Road scammers.
Those photos are dead to me. Also, a lot of chapters in this book. A hell of a lot of chapters.
Yes.
And James, you love the names.
I mean, that was one of the pluses of this book. Just the... Yeah, I haven't got any written down. Have you got any that you can...
I've got one. Battered Sausage, Swan Attacks, and Goals, Goals, Goals.
Yeah, they're all quite
fun. That sounds like a VHS from like the 90s by Nick Hancock.
Like Nick Hancock, yeah.
Yeah.
My favourite was Sacked Managers, Wedding Days, and Chesney Hawks.
It sounds like a Snog Marry Avoid, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Also, like each chapter is like 3 pages long. It's so odd.
Yeah,
it's
they're like, very short. Yeah,
there's 31 chapters from memory. Yeah, and they're all very short.
And each chapter will be like one thing, and another thing. So if you're ever reading the book, you get to like halfway through the chapter, and he mentions a thing. He'll be like, "Anyway, I had a battered sausage," and you're like, "Oh, that's why it's called battered sausage." Cool. Later on, there'll be Chesney Hawks, and I saw Chesney Hawks. Okay, cool.
Yeah, you get that movie title thing 31 times throughout the book.
So. Oh, that's the name of the movie.
Yeah. Jack, another thing you loved is forward from I'm gonna keep doing that joke
non-stop.
Yeah. From a guy who we haven't seen pop up yet, Jake Humphrey of BT Sport and Being Tall fame.
Is it because he's being tall?
Yeah, he's extremely tall. I don't think that's why he was asked to write the foreword.
No,
as the tallest man I know, please.
It's genuinely a very, very funny foreword. It's an odd start because it starts with him going, "You are going to love this book," which is very aggressive. as a person reading it, it felt but like it was kind of grabbing you by the lapels and going, because I
do you think Norwich put pressure on him? Look, people are paying 20 quid for this book. You can't tell them it's great.
Have the first line be, "It's going to be really, really good." Also, I wonder who else is, because he sort of says, like, maybe, like, why have you, he at one point is like, "Why have you read this book? Is it because you're a Norwich fan? Do you just like lots of football teams? Maybe you just like people who try really hard. I can't possibly say."
What a forward has to be.
Yeah, it was like begging you to carry on reading.
What is a book?
Webster's defines it as.
We're making it sound terrible. It is generally very good.
It's generally a very good foreword. It's mostly really good because at the end of it, he has a series of testimonials by it seems like Norwich fans.
And Paul McVeigh.
Yeah. Norwich fans, Paul McVeigh, Brian Gunn, who's a manager. But then they're I was fascinated by these people because he would say like a testimonial and there's stuff like, "He played for the badge on the front of the shirt, so we'd never forget the name on the back," which sounds like he's dead. Really?
Yes, it does.
It's the type of thing you would say at a funeral. I looked up who these testimonies are from. Some are from, as you say, Brian Gunn, Paul McVeigh. One is Ashley Howell, Director of Regulatory Affairs at Aviva.
Who aren't Aviva based in Norwich?
They are, yeah. So it sort of has a weird connection. And also the best, the second best one is DC Kim Taylor, who is a detective constable. And then the last one, one of the other ones is from someone called Ibiza Jack.
Yeah, who is that guy? Ibiza Jack.
I looked up Ibiza Jack, no record.
Wow. Are you Ibiza Jack?
On the hotel.
Ibiza Jack says, "Legend is an overused word, but never is it more applicable." And the fact that he's called Ibiza Jack, I feel like he's someone who uses the word legend a lot.
Oh, yeah.
He says it like three times. Three times a sentence.
"Legend is an overused word, but that was a legendary breakfast." But really, it sets you up very nicely for the whole thing. I think it gets you into it. And the whole thing does feel quite chummy. It is like Grant's giving you a big old hug and letting you know his stories and pulling you over, sitting you on his knee. I don't know where I'm going with this.
You know why that is, though?
Why?
That's because he's an Aries and he talks about being an Aries quite a lot. And that's just what they're like, you know?
See, Tash, you're very good for star signs because in the nicest possible way, I've never entertained star signs as a thing. But I think you've mentioned that several times on the podcast.
But he said, Grant Holt says it. That he is an Aries, and I think
I read he says he is Aries, the god. I misread that.
Well, you know I'm Aries, the god of war.
But that's why I think this book was written for us, because there's something for all of us in there, and that I think he put in there for me.
That's nice. I think he possibly is a superstitious guy as well. Yeah. There's a bit where later on in the book he says they had a third child because a gypsy, as he says, predicted it in Covent Garden.
That's so weird.
So they had to make it happen.
So buckle up, guys. That's what kind of stuff you're going to get used to in this episode. Young Grant Holt. What do we think of the beginning, guys? All that, I mean, James, we already know that you don't like children, so you ignored this whole section. But there's a bit right from the beginning I really liked, which where he says, football for me has always been about the whole culture of turning up to a match, of being around the smell of deep heat, of lads putting on knee bandages, others putting Vicks around their eyes. Football for Grant is about first aid, in my opinion. See, none of that is about football. He should have been a doctor.
I read it as the same thing, but he just likes strong smells. He sets it up like he's gonna talk about. He talks about the culture, and you think he's gonna say, you know, like cleaning your boots or playing on muddy pitches or whatever. And he just lists strong smells after that.
I quite liked the early bit. I thought when he talks about when he's playing non-league and he was like, oh, I was never that bothered about winning, but I wanted the bonus so my mates could get their kids Christmas present and stuff. I was like, this has set me up for what Grant Holt is the whole way through.
That was very sweet, that bit. That was almost too sweet.
Yeah. because it seems like, because he has this meteoric rise at the age of about 26 or so, he kind of really works his way back up the divisions. And it feels like that that real commitment, that drive, kind of comes a bit later when he has all these opportunities going his way. Not to say he doesn't work hard. He does work really hard, you know, traveling all around the world to go play for different different clubs. But yeah, I know what you mean. At the beginning, he's much more like, he's a very everyman at the beginning. And he doesn't
He makes some comment about like when he was working in the tyre factory, if a tyre ripped, he wouldn't stress out about the day later. So if a game didn't go his way, he wouldn't stress out about the day later. And I was like, this guy's got a bit more perspective than the others that we read and they go really home and like set fire to a car or something.
True, yeah. Or just lose it in Jermaine Pennant's car. Yeah. Forget he had it. Yeah.
Again, allegedly. We can't...
Allegedly. Sorry, Sky Andrew, if you're listening.
at the top, he does seem very like... There's a bit later on where he's... I think a manager says to him like, oh, you think he's playing at Barrow? And he's like, oh, do you want me to tell you if anyone comes in and like ask you to put you on trial? Like to go on trial to another team. And he's like, no, I'm okay, actually. If my life could just be I work in a tyre factory and I play for Barrow, that'd be great. And
Grant, United are on the phone.
You're fine. Don't worry about it.
Well, there's a bit, isn't there, where he says, oh, I nearly didn't go to the Wednesday trial because it had cost me 40 quid in petrol. Are you sure about that?
Yeah, because they sort of go like, oh, can you come to another day? And he's like, well, I've already booked that day off, so I have to do it then.
Actually, to be honest, you might say he didn't want to move on to anything else. There's one club he would love to move to, which is Carlisle, his local club. And he says something at one point, which is like, I always said if I ever play for Carlisle, I wouldn't kiss the badge, I'd lick it. I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means either. So when I moved to Rochdale, I would kiss the badge. When I moved to Shrewsbury, I would likely caress it with my tongue.
When I moved to Norwich, scale.
I really liked the bit quite early on about his dad, where apparently his dad was incredibly competitive to the point that he would. At one point, his brother walked in on him playing Tiger Woods golf
on the Sega
station.
On Sega.
Yeah. And he apparently made a mess up a shot, so he grounded him. Such an incredibly petty thing to do. And
then he grounded his friend as well.
His friend as well.
He does ground his friend. It's so weird. Just imagine if you went over to your friend's house and he was like, hey, watch this. Hey, Dad, missed the shot. And his dad was like, that's it. You're grounded and you're grounded too.
But I agree with you, Jack, about the dad. Very sweet, the whole relationship. And sad thing to mention, but his dad does pass away quite early on in the book. And Jack, we messaged each other about this, that it was really, really nicely written and extremely sad
really
and moving.
It was so well, genuinely, it was so well written. I wasn't expecting it to be like, I mean, obviously, you know, I think with all of these things, it's very difficult to go into a serious event like that. But it's just, there's a bit where he talks about how I think he was playing for Oldham was it Oldham? Halifax. Must be Halifax.
Yes.
He didn't play for Oldham. He was playing for Halifax at the time. It'd be weird. Yeah.
He was playing for Bayern Munich.
But he drove up to see his, or he went to the car, like to the hospital, and apparently just sat in the car for a while because he didn't want to go in because going in would make it real. And that was just the bit that was so, so like heartbreaking and brilliant. Like,
yeah,
it really took me by surprise.
I agree. It was a tough part to read. And I thought it was very sweet that he wears shin pads with the day his dad passed every game. That was the moment I was like, okay, this is a different Grant Holt to the one I imagined. And I thought it was really, 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 really moving and really brilliantly written.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot one thing that is great about this book.
Oh, sure.
Every chapter has years. Oh.
Oh, yes. Good point.
God. I know. Yeah.
Oh, bliss. Absolute bliss. Thank you so much.
Marcus Hanneman had days. Marcus Hanneman had days.
Oh, but Marcus Hanneman had days, but he'd say, like, 8 years ago, I was in Seattle while saying.
He's just such a big nerd, Marcus Hanneman. I hope I never meet him in the street because I'm going to deck him.
Tash, this is really building up. You gave that book 6 out of 10 last time.
Yeah, but the more I think about it, the more annoying I find it.
I don't think I can reach him,
but I give it a go.
Tash is able to separate the art and the artist. You know?
I cannot. True.
Maybe Jake Humphrey will let you sit on his shoulders.
And just punch you in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, I'll do that. Yeah. That's true. You can actually gauge when things are happening. You're right.
Yeah, like I actually know how old Grant Holt is. I was aware of it.
That happens to go on Wikipedia and research.
Yeah, and be like, okay, so at this point, he's 90. In 1993, that must make him... It would actually just say, like, when he was, how old he was, or what year it was. It was so good.
Now,
perfect.
Because of the kind of accuracy of what he says, I've been able to pinpoint something in this book that I think I may have played a role in.
Oh, my God.
What?
Is this like when James got that Coca-Cola?
A little
card.
Bit like that, yeah. So you may or may not remember that he says that he was having a bit of trouble with his leg, and then he went to Alton Towers and someone slammed a thing down on it, and it meant that he had to go into pre-season training early, and if it wasn't for that, then he feels like he would never have become a pro footballer.
Yeah, I
worked on the rides at Alton Towers at that
no.
time. And no. I was horrible and was probably hungover. So I reckon it was me that shoved his leg that led him to become a pro footballer.
No way.
Yes way.
That
Grant,
is mind
if you're listening.
Blowing.
If you're listening and want to thank Tash for everything she did.
Doesn't he say because we should tell the actual anecdote in the thing. It's like he goes to Alton Towers and he has his leg in like a horrible bit of traction, and he says that a woman who worked there like slammed the roller coaster thing down his leg.
Yeah, and he calls her a horrible scream. Aries.
Yeah.
That's what Grant said.
Oh, Grant's going back in my bad book. But no, I honestly, the timing works out. So I'm just saying.
Incredible.
I was, you know, that sounds a lot like me, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
Baffling.
This is our biggest exclusive yet. And so we've had the guy who sells Christmas trees to Glenn Roeder.
That's genuinely mind-blowing. Oh, my God.
Wow. God, that is an
incredible. So if you're listening, Grant, if it was on either the Black Hole or the Nemesis, it was me. Just saying. Wow.
I've never been to Alton Towers, but I really wish I'd gone there now. Because my life, I wouldn't be doing this stinking podcast. I'll tell you that.
Alton Towers got this crazy woman who can turn people into pro footballers.
And she told me I was going to have a third child.
Yeah.
Right, moving on from Tash, being like the sliding doors moment in his life.
I don't like the idea that like we've somehow impacted on this book. It freaks me out.
It makes it feel
genuinely
dirty.
Makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Tash, did you ever work for a curtain company in Venlo? Because Maya Yoshida's very angry with you. At the end of every chapter. Not every chapter. At the end of some of the chapters, there are some amazing things in the book.
yes.
Grant decides to break up this book in a novel way we haven't really seen so far with his top fives. basically. He starts with normal things like his top five favorite players, the top five players he played against. But then it gets quickly mad. Grant Holt's top five kids TV shows. Grant Holt's top five reasons the North is better than the South. His top five service stations. And my favorite, Grant Holt's top five chocolate bars. I'm going to ask you what you think of that in a second, guys. But first of all, I've got a little game for you. You excited?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
Is it about the top fives?
It is. This game is cool. Yes. What chocolate bar is Grant Holt describing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Jesus. Guys, you all ready for this? Yes. Number one. What chocolate bar is Grant Holt describing? Lovely bit of caramel with a small dollop of biscuit. Phenomenal.
That's a boost. Oh, that is a boost.
He calls a boost phenomenal.
Is it boost?
Yeah, that is a
oh,
boost.
Oh, crap.
Jack and Tash, you're both right. Sorry, James and Tash. Sorry, James.
Yeah,
and Tash,
I was wrong.
You're both
right.
What did you say, Jack?
I said Twix like an idiot.
Fool.
The reason that I remember that it was a boost is because at one point he describes one of the coach's training sessions as phenomenal. But then I remembered that he also described a boost as phenomenal. So it's like hard to gauge.
It's hard to take anything seriously off that point, isn't it?
I thought boosts, aren't boosts the ones with like the energy stuff in them? Is that
yeah.
a boost? That
really
is. Doesn't reference that, you know?
Guys, we're getting bogged down on boosts. There's still 17 more questions to go.
Okay, go.
Number two, what chocolate bar is this? Another one you don't see very often now. Hazelnut, nougat, and caramel. Great diversity.
Is that a topic?
Tash is right.
Okay, Grant Holt doesn't know what diversity means.
Yeah.
Do you think he's like, oh yeah, like diversity is really important in the workplace. Like
yeah.
you have to find lots of people who like topics.
Topic is the correct answer. Number three, quick one. This three-word review: solid, very solid. What chocolate bar is that?
Twix.
Yes.
Oh,
James.
Ah,
nuts.
James got that right with the delay, so you guys really suck. Number four, gutted this isn't made anymore. I loved it as a kid. Chocolate casing with a creamy mousse. Perfect.
Secret
is correct.
I've
Jack.
Never heard of a secret.
I've never heard
what
of it either.
No idea what a secret is. I don't
it
know
was
if
because he said mousse, and it freaked me out. The idea of like it's something called
like
secret, which is a mousse. Oh,
yeah, I have no idea what that is. If anyone's ever heard of a secret bar, get in touch. And finally, the most delicious thing of all, I could lick it all day long. What's he describing?
The Carlisle badge.
It is! James has got my
badge. Damn it!
Yes, James.
That was a trick.
Damn it, you saw through my trick question. You are. God, I need to start a new podcast. As you can tell with his chocolate bar questions, diet's very important to him. he has a battered sausage, curried fried rice, and chips a lot before every game.
Yeah.
So
that was really sweet. Where he's again, that's part of a superstition, which is he's like, oh, I played really well because I had a battered sausage and curry fried rice. Again, another place where he gets his like Chinese food from a place that does sausages and chips.
Yeah,
like Marcus Hanneman.
Low standards. Yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
it's
Marcus
so bizarre.
Hanneman bought all his takeaways from one place. He's got a Chinese, Indian, pizza.
He's like, oh, it's so convenient. Yeah. It's not convenient.
Yeah, Lebanese.
It's disgusting. and his because he has a he's living with a teammate at that point whose name now escapes me. His teammate is very like we have dinner at 7 o'clock and it must be carbonara. Or something like that. So he describes like turning up with like a battered sausage and the roommate is like, what the fuck are you doing? How dare you break our sacred
it's
thing.
It's carbonara night.
But then he scores loads of goals with it. So not with the battered sausage. That'd be bizarre.
But the top fives are amazing. They're one of my favourite ways ever to break up the book.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did you guys actually think of the top fives? Because it was very different from anything we've seen before, but it was also complete nonsense.
It was. It was very Partridge, especially the service stations.
The service stations, particularly bizarre. I think it had the effect of like being like breaking things up, but also undermining quite a lot of what he was saying before, because he was at one point describing one of his teammates who was like, they did it like a memorial game for him because he had got a very rare form of cancer, and how it's such a, you know, how we should make the most of everything that we've got in our lives at any one point. And then it segues immediately into the top five wrestlers, which is just nonsense.
But I feel like he was already struggling with the, with what he put in the book. What else would he come up with? Like top five, like dictators. Like what's he? What else? Would he, like,
Mussolini, solid, very solid.
Top five numbers, three, one syllable, nice and simple. It's like, what are these?
He does, however, in one of them, acknowledge that Stoke is the North, and that never happens. So I was quite pleased with him for that one.
Oh, does Stoke get overlooked sometimes?
People always say that it's South, and it's not. It's North.
What?
And he says it's...
Who's saying that?
I mean, you say this as two Southerners who count as the North. So.
Yeah. I count Walthamstow as the North. I live just below Walthamstow. Jack, you kind of touched upon him living with his friend for a bit. I love all the stuff about him moving around the world because he really did move around a lot. He was in Singapore for a bit, played in Australia for a bit, went Sheffield Wednesday to Rochdale. He wasn't afraid to drop a division sometimes.
I mean,
he was. Yeah,
like,
sorry,
he traveled the world, but he did go to Singapore, Australia, and then very much like Halifax, Rochdale, Shrewsbury.
True.
It's not like.
Yeah.
Like, it's
he did a
very
little tour of like
of...
the North, yeah, after that.
Yeah. It's like, I've done Singapore, I've done Australia, where now? Rochdale.
But I was. There's some of these chapters are really great. There's one which starts, really draws you in, which is chapter 13. The first line is, did you punch Colin Calderwood is a question I get asked a lot. I loved it. I loved it. And amongst all of it as well, he talks about his personal life a lot, which is rare. Like, I don't want to just pit Hux v. Holt, but Darren, as we mentioned several years ago, never mentions his wife. And Grant Holt mentions his lovely wife, Faye, and their kids. Too much. No, over and over again. It's really great.
You know what? It becomes quite annoying by the end. I'm just like, go through the goals against Colchester, please. No, it's genuinely great. It's really lovely. Cute.
It I is. Also like that she just has no time for football.
She just hates
it. Yeah,
she's just not interested in it whatsoever.
But it's actually,
doesn't
but
pretend.
It's such a nice bit because like there'll be stories where he's like when they lose 7-1 in his first game when he plays for Norwich, he loses 7-1 to Colchester, and he calls Faye up and he's like, "Oh my god," and she's like, "Hello, how are you?" He's like, have you seen the score? And he went, no, what happened? Did you win? He went, no, we lost 7-1. She went, oh, that's not good. Anyway.
I was going to say, it's weird that she doesn't even pretend that she likes football. She never goes to any game. She never even, doesn't know what the score is. And then weirdly, the one game she chooses to go to, I think it's like Darlington away, and she almost gets smashed in the face with the ball. And I think her dad breaks her wrist or something. Like, no wonder she doesn't like going to the
I'm cursed.
Or she's like, oh yeah, football, I know that sport. The one where I get hit in the face and my dad breaks his hand. Yeah. Cool.
I have to go to Darlington.
Enjoy more of that. But he actually says it's a real like positive. He seems to like talk about how like talking to Faye, and because Faye isn't interested in football, it means he sort of just switches off from it. Which is really nice, actually.
There's one moment where he switches off too much. Which in a segment that echoes Sean Gota when he's when Faye is giving birth, he's downstairs playing Call of Duty, and she calls him, and he just thinks she's lazy for doing so. And then he eventually stops playing Call of Duty and drives to the hospital, and then they stop to buy a sandwich on the way. They didn't get any money out for the babies, like Sean Gota and his wife, but
which is ridiculous, because what are they going to do when that baby comes out?
Yeah, how are they going to buy their sandwiches?
But if it was Sean Gota and Faye having a baby, that would be a nightmare, the amount of times that they stop
for
sandwiches and to get cash out. The baby would have been born at the side of the road and wrapped in a Subway wrapper.
But covered in cash. I really like how he says that when he and Faye started going out, it's really sweet. well, like they must be like, I think they're quite young, aren't they? They're like 17 or 18.
Yeah.
So apparently Faye and her friends like asked him like, Grant, do you like Faye? And apparently he said no, but then started singing It's Just a Little Crush by Jennifer Page at her.
Big.
Which is amazing.
It's a tune.
What a way to tell you like someone.
And that's one of the rare moments of the book where he doesn't have to mention the year, because that is so 1997 or so thing to do that it doesn't really, doesn't even need it. But yeah, that is great. And again, just gives you a little, like I think someone mentioned it earlier. You mentioned it, Tash, when you said the Chesney Hawks title of the chapter, which is because he genuinely walks down the aisle to Chesney Hawks, I am the one and only. Yeah. The level of self-confidence, I love it.
Also, like, the blokes don't usually walk down the aisle, do they?
Aren't you? To music the as well? To music?
He does, yeah.
To music, yeah. Like, isn't like that a wrestler. Quite odd?
Yeah, true. Matt, is that what he came out to when he was wrestling? Talking about his Journeyman days, I've got this week's dramatic reading. You excited for it, guys?
Yes. Yes. I have no idea what it would be.
There's so many bets.
There are loads of possible dramatic readings. That is a very good point. We had to really narrow this down. The one that I've chosen is this dramatic reading is called Grant Holt Laughs as His Friend is Attacked by a Swan. Our first match of the season was against Scunthorpe at Glanford Park. It was a roasting hot day and we started the game really well, absolutely battering them. After 20 minutes, out of nowhere, a swan swooped down and landed on the pitch. It was a bloody beast of a bird. And it plopped down right next to our goalkeeper, Neil Edwards. The ref stopped play and Neil, trying to be the hero, went over to get the swan. Quite what he thought he was going to do it once he picked it, I'm not sure. Put it in goal with him, adopt it, have it with some potatoes.
Those three options are really weird.
Yeah. In adoption. That order.
Yeah.
Right, first of all, I'm going to put it in goal with me. Then I'll take it home.
Then it's my son. and then I will eat my son.
Yes.
Very odd.
Weirdly, a psychic in Covent Garden told him a swan would land next to him. he crept up behind it and just he was about to lunge to grab it. The swan turned around, stood its ground and stared at Neil. It just stood there, eyeballing it, beak to nose. Doesn't say who belongs to who. It was like it was saying, you want some, do you, mate? Next, the bird jerked its beak forward, grabbed Neil's glove, bit his fingers and took the glove clean off his hand. The players were in stitches. The ref didn't know what to do. The crowd was giving Neil all sorts of abuse. What would they chant? Ah, swan idiot.
Swan's got your glove, hasn't he, mate?
You glovey swan boy. Glovey swan boy.
Glovey swan boy.
Where was I? And I was just sitting there thinking, please fly off with the glove. Please fly off with it. It didn't. Sadly, the swan dropped the glove. Shame. That was the drama. Took off, circled the ground for a minute until it got high enough and then flew away to huge cheers. Unfortunately for us, after that, we were absolutely dreadful. And Neil ended up letting in three goals. He blamed the swan. Beautiful story.
To be honest, I think I would blame the swan, actually. Yeah. I was thinking about it, like, initially. Like, oh, that's unfair that you blame the swan. I think if a swan came up to my place of work and stole, like...
my standing desk.
Have you played Untitled Goose Game?
It yes, I have.
Like it should be the final level in that.
Yeah, that's true. Steal Grant Holt's mate's
gloves. Yeah.
I was reading about this and thinking it must be online somewhere. I looked it up and couldn't find it anywhere. Ooh. And like, I found highlights of the match, but I didn't find highlights of a swan coming and grabbing the goalkeeper's glove. Now, if you were making the highlights package for this game, would you just be like,
definitely.
You know what? I'm not going to put the swan in.
Maybe they just cut away like they do when there's a streaker on the pitch.
Yeah, maybe they confused it for a naked woman.
You wouldn't. It's not like, because what the reason they don't show the streaker on the pitch is because they don't want to encourage the streaker. But you're not going to do. It's not like they're going. Sky Sports are saying,
don't encourage you to be a swan.
Yeah, we shouldn't encourage these swans, should we? I feel like that would have made the news. Like
I am surprised there's no video of that.
Would have been everywhere.
We'll look into that. Let's get Detective Constable Norwich involved. She remember it. So after all this time going around all kinds of clubs, he goes to Shrewsbury, drops down from Forest. Then he goes to Norwich, where he kind of makes his name. But the person he really loves is someone he meets at Forest and at Norwich, Wesley Houlihan, who Ken wrote a song about And talking of which, who wants this week's Ken song?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Yes.
Please.
For those who don't know, Ken is a friend of ours who rings up quite a lot and just makes up chants of footballers who don't exist anymore. Well, they do exist, but play,
don't just anymore.
Old footballers. He used to do it with Norwich ones. Now he does it with Wigan players.
And Grant Holt was both of them, which is nice.
Oh, true. That's a good point. He did play for Norwich and Wigan.
Works nicely.
Very good. This song's not about Grant Holt, I'm sorry. to the tune of Kesha's TikTok. Don't stop, make it pop. DW blowing up tonight. We gon' fight till we get the score right. TikTok on the clock. Mario Melchior scoring goals.
I love how little faith you had in that one.
Yeah, I wasn't. On paper.
On paper, fantastic. But you were like, I reckon you looked at that and were like, I'm so far away from Mario Melchior. I've got a long way to go.
It seemed to take him forever to get to Norwich, because that's how I remember him. And I kept thinking, next chapter, he'll be at Norwich. And he just he played for like 85 clubs before he got to Norwich for some reason. And winning all sorts of weird made-up cups. We talked about that, James. He won some cups that just sound completely made up. I can't remember the name of them. Is it the Smith's Crisps Cup?
Smith's Crisps.
Smith's Crisps Cup. And then there's another one.
What are Smith's Crisps?
I don't know. Auto Windscreens Shield.
Oh, Auto Windscreen, that's a thing.
Oh, yeah, Auto Windscreen Shield.
Yeah, that's a thing, James.
They really made me laugh, so I just thought, what other mundane sort of brands combined with some kind of trophy could he have won? So I thought...
he could have realistically won, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Curry's PC World Trinket.
Nice. I think he did win that when he was at Rochdale.
At Halifax, he may or may not have won the Duolingo Goblet.
I'm fairly sure I've won that for learning Spanish for 100 days.
And I feel like when he was at Carlisle, he might have won the Hobbycraft Beaker.
You had a lot of fun making these.
Yeah, I really did.
Yeah, we could still award him the Hobbycraft Beaker. We could still just give him that trophy at some point. We could. Yeah. Nothing's stopping us.
Yeah. It's a free country.
Yeah, I can make whatever the hell kind of branded trophy I like. You're right. It does take forever to get to Norwich. But when he gets there, it's great. And it goes amazing for him. He gets promoted all the time. Bumps into Hux. Bumps into Darren Huckabee.
Yeah.
That's
like a slight crossover with Hux.
There's another nice crossover. A big crossover with the first book. Everyone who listens will probably remember Nigel Worthington kicking a skip in Norwich's changing room. Remember that, guys?
Classic, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's another thing. I don't know what's going on in Norwich changing rooms. What's hanging around all the time in there? Because it's in a game that you mentioned earlier, Jack, the Colchester 7-1 in his debut, which a lot of Norwich fans will remember not very fondly. They lost 7-1 at home. And in the changing room, they come back in and Wes Houlihan's kicking off. What the F was that? The goals are effing S. We're defending like C's. You can fill in the gaps. No one say anything to Theo. He was sitting there on his debut, absolutely gutted. That's a goalkeeper called Theo something. He's Australian. I can't remember his name.
And he drops later on. It's really sad because Huckabee. Oh, God, I've done it. I've confused Huckabee and Holt. I'm so sorry. Holt is walking out with him and Theo, I've forgotten his name again. Like his phone goes off and Theo drops his phone in front of some fans. And you can't pick up anything, you idiot. And he never played for Norwich ever again. So sad.
He got rid of it. As a manager, you can do one of two things when you're firing them down at halftime. You can either launch into the players or you can go jovial. Jovial? And put it down to one of those things. Oh, it's going great. It's brilliant. What a day.
I love that idea.
Yeah,
the other this is weird, isn't it, guys? Football, eh? Oh, 5-0 down at home.
Brian tried angry, but didn't quite go as he planned. He screamed and shouted a bit and chucked a bottle of sun cream in a rage. I imagine he thought it'd be an angry statement, but instead the sun cream squirted out of the bottle and flew absolutely everywhere, splattering all over people's suits. As soon as it happened, he apologised for it. It's just such a funny idea. The idea of just like launching into people and then going, I'm so sorry.
It's really sweet. I feel like Brian Gunn is my
spirit animal.
Patronus. Like he's my idea of like a a person in the sense that if I ever get angry and I ever do anything, I then immediately go, I'm really sorry about that. I did not mean to get sun cream everywhere all over your face. I'm so sorry.
He loves Brian Gunn as well. He also loves Brian Gunn. Grant Holt loves him. He does say he's great.
Yeah. And actually, to be honest, Grant Holt has very few mean words to say about anyone.
Yeah, true.
Even if they
mess up, he's very honest. He's honest, but he's nice about it, yeah. But Brian Gunn doesn't last. They bring in Paul Lambert, who he loves, who he works with at Villa again later and at Norwich. Also, in between them, they bring in some guys called Butterworth and Crook. he never says their first name, but it sounds like some Dickens characters, like some debt collectors or something.
It sounds like the people who stole the bodies in the...
Yeah,
in
all those two little mice in Chicken Run.
Yeah. That's what he brought in, amateurs.
Yeah. All right there, guys, it's me, Butterworth and Crook. What we're first going to do is steal some eggs.
You want sun cream? It'll cost you.
I'll teach you how to fly, Grant Holt. I'll teach you good.
Very niche reference for Chicken Run there. Yes.
Big crossover audience. All the Norwich stuff is great, though. He gets on the verge of the England team, which is amazing. And it's a real love letter to Norwich, a lot of this. If you're a Norwich fan, it kind of makes sense they only sell it in the shop. But...
Well, I don't think it does in a way, because so much of it isn't about Norwich.
True, and, like, but he really does love Norwich. He loves Norwich.
So he loves Norwich, and it's great. But like, I worked it out. Like, this book is, 280 pages long or something?
Yeah.
And like, of that, maybe like less than 100 are Norwich.
Something crazy
like that. And it's like, I'm not saying this is a reason you shouldn't get it if you're a Norwich fan, because you definitely should, because it's cracking if you're a Norwich fan.
Yeah,
but
for
just
sure.
That there's so much, like, he first mentions Norwich in like page 150, and he first mentions it being like, oh, I remember them because they had a horrible yellow top which we called the bird shit top. You're like, if you're a Norwich fan reading that, you'd be like, okay, I have sat through 150 pages of Rochdale, Shrewsbury, Barrow, tyres, chocolate bars, and then the first thing that I hear is that the shirt's terrible.
It is true, but apart from that one line, I think he's pretty affectionate towards Norwich.
Oh, no, yeah, he is really, really
And the England stuff's amazing. I really do get the sense when you're reading the book that it's beyond his wildest dreams, the fact that he almost gets in the England squad and he never expected it. And then, you know, everything beyond that, it doesn't really matter. Like, there's some quite fun stories. I think, James, you do liked it as well. All the stuff about, you know, Wigan and Hibs and all the other clubs he goes to at the end. But in a way, you know, he's achieved everything by that point, and it's
what's weird though, I think, is that because he talks about when he's at Shrewsbury and he says, like, if I'd won the playoff, because just before he moves to Norwich,
he loses
the playoff final against Gillingham, I think.
Sure.
And he says that if he'd won that, he probably wouldn't have gone to the Premier League, which is sort of one of those crazy things.
Yeah,
he sort of has. It's a really interesting
thing.
That's
his second sliding doors moment after Tash ruined his leg.
Tash saved his career, guys. Yeah. Come on. He immediately went to Thorpe Park this time, and where James Bug smacked him over the head with...
I have never worked in hospitality.
Sorry.
Apologies. But it's the snobbiest thing I've said so far on the podcast.
Only white collar jobs for Mr. Buck. Yeah. You know. But he says, like, when he's at Shrewsbury, if they'd won, and this makes sense, and I'd never really thought about it, if they'd won, because they were in League Two, he'd stayed with Shrewsbury no matter what. He would have stayed in League One. And by the time, if Shrewsbury stayed up, or probably more than likely went down, he wouldn't have been able to get another big move because it would be too late.
Yeah, so the Norwich thing happens at exactly the right time. Yeah, you're right.
And he talks about how, like, his wildest dreams, or like his like, you know, like what I could potentially do, the big thing he's aiming for is the Championship. That's it.
Yeah, true.
He isn't going
for
the Premier League.
No.
He's just going for the Championship.
Yeah.
Because the Premier League seems so wildly far off.
Yeah. And he ends it being on the verge of Euro 2012, which I vaguely remember. I vaguely remember the calls for him being included there. Oh, actually, as a separate thing, something I loved in the book, as a Spurs fan, the two best players he says he ever played against, Modric and Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Brilliant Real Madrid players.
He also praises Ledley King as well.
He does praise Ledley. Although he says that they beat Spurs and Ledley King was fantastic. He almost didn't get anything wrong, but then talks about how like Ledley King nearly gave away 3 penalties as well. Very funny.
Oh yeah, that's true. Which is just very un-Ledley.
I think there was a swan on the pitch.
Right, I've had enough of that. I've had 6 months without any Spurs bashing. So
and now we're back.
And then it ends with a letter to himself, which is a nice little way of ending the book.
Yeah.
It's really sweet.
I love that letter to himself.
Yeah, it's really sweet.
So I loved it as well. But there is a problem.
I knew
there
was a but. Yeah.
It's really nice. It's really nice. But he wrote it how old was he when he published his book? 38, maybe?
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
So
yeah, it only came out last year, this book, I think, or 2 years ago. Yeah.
So why is it written to 21-year-old?
Because that's when he's going to give up.
Yes.
Is that who he writes it to, 21-year-old?
Yeah, he writes it to 21-year-old. Yeah,
it's addressed to Tash.
But,
yeah.
But that means...
Next time I see you, don't hurt my leg as much, please. I'm begging you.
Right, what doesn't make sense about it is that means because he's printed it in this book, 21-year-old Grant Hull has to wait until he's 38 to see it when this book's out, which is
did
stressful.
You want him to like put it in a bottle and in
but
the
that's
ocean
it if he'd have put it yeah exactly if he'd maybe he'd have put it in a bottle, taken it to the gypsy in Covent Garden, maybe he could have got it to him somehow, but he's printed it in this book, and it, by this point if he's reading it in the book, he could just read the book and find out more details. He doesn't need to read the letter. It's at the end.
James, you've forgotten. They've taken this book to CERN. And this is the book they're going to send back through time.
Oh, okay.
They're sending this book back to 2002.
Didn't
to Alton Towers, 2002.
Yeah. So it's like a Grey's Sports Almanac situation, is it? He's going to get it to him somehow. Right, okay. All right. Okay, that's fine.
That would be so weird if you had intimate knowledge of what's going to happen for the next like 15 years. Everything that's going to happen, all the craziness that'll happen, and you use it just to make Grant Holt's career slightly better.
Time well spent. Did this book change you? Quick on this, if possible, guys.
I'd say so.
Thanks, guys. I agree.
Yep.
Me too. What are we going to give out of 10? So on the leaderboard, we've had one book so far, Old Yurtsy, who got a disappointing 5.5 out of 10. James, what are you scoring? What are you scoring, Grant?
I'm going to give it a 6.
What?
A 7.
No, he said 6. He said 6.
Well, I was going between 6 and 7. And
you're so harsh.
Well,
7. 7.
Okay, 7. Fine. Jack?
8.
Tash?
9.
Oof.
Because I think it was like actually well written for one.
I agree. I'm also saying 9. It's my favorite book so far.
Yeah.
It generally is my favorite book so far. I love McAteer's book, but I think I prefer Grant Holt's.
Interesting. Okay. I really like this book. I just don't believe that a swan actually came down and stole it.
And that cost it 2 points.
That cost it 2 marks.
I really just now want to go for a pint with this man. So,
yeah, I do know what you mean.
Yeah.
Come on, Grant, let's go out. We're cool. In honor of his wrestling career for the quiz this week, we haven't even mentioned his wrestling career. We didn't mention so many others. I'm giving you all wrestlers this week. Jack, you're The Undertaker.
Brilliant.
Tash, you're Trish Stratus.
Stratus?
Yes. I don't know. And James, you're Grant the Incredible Holt. Holt.
You sure you want to do that with a delay I've got?
No, please. I need the points.
I'm not optimistic you'll be getting all these. Number one, what is Heike Dike?
Oh, The Undertaker.
Yes.
It's a game from Carlisle where you jump over fences.
Hedges.
That apparently only exist in Carlisle because apparently he went up towards friends when he moved to clubs and was like, Heike Dike, Heike Dike. And they were like, what the hell are you talking about?
Are you okay?
Heike Dike.
Bonus points if you know what Heike Dike means. Got to shout out your name. It means literally hike over a dike.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Question number two. What does Grant describe as the best cartoon ever?
Oh, God.
Oh, The Undertaker.
Yes.
Is it the Jetsons?
No, it is not.
No. Is it Thundercats?
What's your name?
Oh, Trish Stratus.
Trish Stratus, your answer, Thundercats, is correct.
Thundercats, yes.
You're correct. One point to Tash.
Very quickly, he does mention the Jetsons.
Yeah.
Because it's such a weird bit where he talks about Simon Grayson, and he says that every time I wanted to talk to Simon Grayson, he'd zoom off, and I ended up calling him the Jetsons, because whenever I wanted to see him, he'd suddenly zoomed off and disappeared. The thing about the Jetsons is they were in the future. It wasn't that they zoomed off. It's so weird. It's like, oh, that's Simon Grayson. He's a cartoon family that zooms off. Unbelievable. Do you know what? Oh, six. Six out of ten.
That's a consistent description of Simon Grayson across all the books.
Yeah.
He's a futuristic family. What is Grant's number one reason for the North being better than the South?
Humor. Oh, Trish does.
Come on, Tash. It is correct.
Like, sense of humor, yeah.
It is correct. His other things are thick skin character, people are more chilled out, scenery, and chippies. And finally, what service station is Grant describing ticks all the boxes? Can't go wrong.
The Undertaker.
Yes.
Warwick.
Very good.
Way.
I'm thinking 40. Because I just want to know what boxes. What are the boxes here?
He's got everything. Anyone has any thoughts on Grant's book? If you've read it or you've got some burning questions, get in touch at Footy Book Club on Twitter, Football Book Club on Instagram. We're going to have a new show called Wider Reading every few episodes where we're going to go into more depth and answer any questions you have. So please do send them in. Other than that, please subscribe, review the podcast, follow us. Any last words, guys?
Hikey dikey.
See you later. Thanks for listening to the Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, Natasha Daniels, and James Bowgen. It was produced and created by James Bug, and I know what you're asking, what are they all up to now? Well, after being turned down for a dream job at Cadbury World, Grant went on to enjoy a career in wrestling. Sadly, he's yet to win the Duolingo Goblet. Brian Gunn still hasn't paid to get sun cream dry cleaned out of Wes Houlihan's suit. Natasha Daniels was dishonorably discharged from Alton Towers for her uncontrollable temper, classic Aries. Butterworth and Crook will be appearing in the upcoming Chicken Run 2. The book is still very hard to track down. Release it worldwide, Norwich, and if you have any idea who or what Ibiza Jack is, please do get in touch. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.